Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 210. So, not a whole lot going on in the news this week outside of the fact that allergies have overtaken me. So if you notice a little bit of my nasaliness, it's just because of the allergy season. Before I started recording this, I was sneezing a storm, so I do apologize. But in any case, I hope you guys aren't as afflicted as I am. This week, I've got a really cool article by one of my favorite Masonic writers of the day, Brother P.D. Newman. We've read some of his pieces before, primarily from the Knight Templar magazine, and this week is no different. He has a great piece that I'd like to read for you that I just got, and as always, his papers are historical and chock full of interesting pieces that really make us think about the way the craft or religions kind of tie in together and some of the mystical traditions that go in with these things. And again, this piece is no different, so I hope you enjoy it. Also, I want to mention that outside of that paper and a famous Freemason for this week, that will probably be the brunt of the show. I do have a busy weekend coming up, and that includes 9 o'clock on Saturday, before the show goes live, I will be talking with the author of a new book, and I did allude to it a bit in previous weeks on the Facebook page, Chronicles from the Future, A True Story Kept Hidden by the Masons, now revealed by Mr. Achilles Syrigos, who is in Greece, and the story is really, supposedly is a true story about a man who was a teacher and a linguist who had a strange condition where he fell asleep for months at a time, sometimes a year, and during his year asleep, he actually went to the future. And he had all these claims and he wrote them all down, and his later students translated the book, and it actually came out, and there was editions released, but they were pulled from shelves and all kinds of wild and crazy things. And Mr. Achilles Syrigos put these together in a readable form in English, and it's going to be called Chronicles from the Future. Anyway, he will be joining me at 9 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock his time on Saturday, to talk about this new book coming out. I thought it would be a great episode of the show. It dives off a little bit into the side of conspiracy, a little bit into the side of a vision of the future, a perfected version of the future. And in this future, these people are like perfected beings. So it was super interesting to me because, you know, we are all about making man and men better, good men, better men. And so it was interesting to read some of the descriptions, some of the symbolism behind some of the things that were written are very interesting, maybe even tying into Rose Croix. So we will see. I'll talk to him. And then on Sunday morning, I'm talking to Frater O for another upcoming episode. So we've got some really cool stuff coming up, and I hope you all enjoy it. And without any further ado, we will get right into this week's paper. Again, this week's paper is by Sir Knight P.D. Newman, titled The Contents of the Cup. And this comes right out of Knight Templar magazine, September 2015, number 9. The Alchemists have said that the fruit of their tree strives up to heaven, because out of the philosophic earth there arises a certain substance, like unto the branches of a loathsome sponge. The point about which the whole art turns lies in the living things of nature, from a likeness not altogether remote. They have called this material virgin's milk and blessed rose-colored blood, for in the blood of this stone is hidden its soul. Elias Ashmole. In our previous treatments of this subject, we demonstrated that the Holy Grail of Arthurian legend was in all probability a veiled allusion to Baphomet, the mysterious severed head allegedly venerated by the original Knights Templar. It was further demonstrated that Masonic Templary in turn incorporated this imagery into its own ritual in the form of the initiatory cup. In the present article, we will tackle the problem of the contents of this cup and discover what it was exactly, aside from its composition and legendary history, that made this particular vessel so very special. To do this, we will first need to turn again to the east and look as far back as 1500 BCE, for it is there that we will find the Vedas, and more importantly, Soma. To this day, Soma is surrounded by mystery. It is spoken of in the Vedas as being at once a plant, a libation, a drug, a bull, and even a deity. Known most commonly as the Red Bull, and often described as having but a single leg and a foot, Soma is not unlike the famed fruit of the tree of life in Judeo-Christian lore, or the legendary Amrita, or food of the gods of the Greeks. Like them, it was purported to confer upon its drinker the gift of immortality. However, Soma's identification has eluded scholars for centuries. It was not until the arrival of the scene of amateur mycologist R. Gordson Wason that a reasonable proposal was set forth which satisfies most, if not all, the requirements detailed in the Vedas. Wason identified Soma as the entheogic and mycorrhizal Amanita muscaria mushroom, commonly known as fly agaric, and still widely used today for ritualistic and religious purposes by numerous indigenous peoples, including the shaman of Siberia. Without entering into the difficult question of whether or not Wason was correct in his identification, which I believe he was, the reader is directed to his books, Soma, the Divine Mushroom of Immortality, and Persephone's Quest, Entheogens and the Origins of Religion, for a full treatment of the subject. As stated above, muscaria mushrooms are entheogic or psychedelic and contain within them a powerful visionary and intoxicating compound called muscimol. When properly prepared and ingested at a safe dosage by humans, these mushrooms have the potential to induce visions of light and sometimes of ascension and disillusion, as well as cause profound introspection and revelations of a personal as well as cosmic nature. On the flip side, they can also induce terrifying hallucinations, disorientation, distortions of time and space, flushing, extreme perspiration, and brutal nausea. Clark Heinrich explains in his remarkable book Strange Fruit that muscaria mushroom begins its life as a small egg-shaped mass before expanding on its stipe into a platter-like cap and finally into its matured chalice shape. Its quote-unquote red with white spots appearance is familiar to us all as the so-called fairy tale mushroom seen in popular children's stories such as Lewis and Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. The white spots are the remnants of the universal veil, which serves two important purposes. First, it protects the fruity body before the mushroom has had time to expand its bright red cap. And second, with its numerous small points, like several tiny horns, the universal veil assists the fruiting body in reaching the sunlight by breaking up any soil which might cover it. Hence, Soma's being likened unto a red bull in the Vedas. The epithet of single foot therefore refers, of course, to the lone stipe which supports the ruddy cap. This figurative bullhead to be slain by the worshippers via pressing out its rich, intoxicating blood. Indeed, Soma even means pressed one. According to the Vedas, the juices of the red bull would be pressed out between two stones and mixed with cow's milk before being ritually drunk by the congregation of worshippers. It is believed that Soma eventually became exclusive to the Brahmin priesthood, and its use by those of other castes was deemed taboo. One early Hindu lawmaker, Manu, even went so far as to declare that the consumption of mushrooms be outlawed completely. Soma did not disappear from the view altogether, however. As many scholars have pointed out, it survived with the ancient Hindus' Middle Eastern neighbors, the Zoroastrians, under the name of Hyoma. Like Soma, Hyoma is described at once as a plant and a libation as well as a bull, and even mentioned in the Zoroastrian holy book, the Zend Avesta. Remarkably, according to the 6th century chronographer John Malalas, ancient Greek legend holds that after decapitating the Gorgon, Perseus used Medusa's head as a skull cup to teach the rite of Zoroaster to the Persians, who took the name of Medes in honor of Medusa. Media is, of course, where Zoroaster, the founder of Zoroastrian religion, is said to have been born. As Carl A.P. Ruck, professor of classics at Boston University, has observed, it is no coincidence that most scholars agree the sound which the Gorgon sisterhood made was a mooing. That is, the lowing of cattle was their sound. As with Soma and Hyoma, the Gorgon from which the skullcap came is implicitly associated with cattle. It is also notable that here we have our first example of the contents of the cup as being consubstantial with its vessel, i.e. both the skull cup and its contents allude to the mushroom. Indeed, for skull cap is even a name commonly applied by laymen to mushrooms of various species. It was during their travels in the Middle East that scholars believe Roman soldiers first encountered the Homa rite, which they then established in their own homeland in the form of the Mithraic mysteries, known as Mithra to the Zoroastrians. Mithras also appears in the Vedas as Maitra, an epithet of Soma, which means a friend of man. Conveniently, Mithra is also known as the Lord of Cattle Pastures, keeping with our peculiar but prevalent bovine theme. Mithra's role in the Zoroastrian religion was as divine mediator. However, the role he played in the Roman manifestation of his cult was considerably more complex. The Roman cult of Mithra was, for all practical purposes, a secret society composed almost wholly of Roman soldiers. Specifically, they were holy warriors. Similar to Freemasonry, the Mithraic mysteries consisted of a hierarchical structure of initiatory degrees or levels of attainment, wherein the mysteries of the cult were progressively imparted to the initiate as he made his advancement through the grades. The final grade, that of pater or father, was symbolized by what appears to be a bowl and staff, suggested of the cap and stipe of a mushroom depicted next to a ruddy and spotted Pythagorean Phrygian cap, also known as a skull cap, and equally indicative of the mushroom, and next to that, a pruning hook, not unlike the one used by Perseus to decapitate Medusa before using the cap of her skull to teach the Haoma rite to the Persians. The members of the Mithraic cult met in small subterranean chambers called Mithrae that were cave-like in appearance. Similar to a Masonic lodge, the floors of the Mithrae were consistently designed as a rectangle or oblong square. Quite unlike a Masonic lodge, on the other hand, is the fact that the eastern wall of every Mithraeum included a depiction of the Pteroctony, a fresco or relief which featured Mithras clad in red with white spots, supported on one leg like the single-footed Soma, and donning a Phrygian cap, also known as a liberty cap, and triumphing over a sacred bull. Here, as with the muscaria-consuming shaman of Siberia, Mithras has made himself consubstantial with the mushroom, taking on the appearance of an object of sacrifice. Furthermore, the shape of the single leg on which Mithras supports himself, paired with the suggestive folds of his clothing and armor in that region, very much itself resembles the cap and stipe of a fruiting body. The Phrygian cap worn by Mithras is no doubt familiar to members of the southern jurisdiction of the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, where, in the Knights Kadosh degree, the Knights Kadosh naturally being the Knights Templar, one encounters the fungally suggestive liberty pole in the form of a Phrygian cap placed atop the shepherd's crook. Note that in addition to the fact that the liberty pole and liberty cap are both common euphemisms for various mushrooms, the Knight's Kadosh degree is similar to the Templar degree in the York Rite concerning certain libations. Rosicrucian scholars Hargrave Jennings tells us in his book, The Rosicrucians, Their Rites and Mysteries, that, quote, "The real meaning of the Cap of Liberty has been involved from time immemorial in deep obscurity, notwithstanding that it has always been regarded as a most important hieroglyph. It signifies the supernatural, simultaneous sacrifice and triumph. The whole is a sign of initiation and of baptism of a peculiar kind." End quote. It is here that we come full circle back to that other secret society of holy warriors with whom we first began, the Knights Templar. As was explained in our previous treatments, in his epic poem, Percival, Knight Wolfram von Eisenbach identified the Grail Knights of Arthurian legend as the Knights Templar. During their fateful trial, we know that many of the Templars confessed to the veneration of a mysterious severed head named by some as Baphomet. It is quite possible that the Templars, like their Roman predecessors in the Mithraic mysteries, employed a muscaria mushroom in an initiatory context, and that this mysterious severed head was actually no more than a symbolic vessel, consubstantial with its contents with which the Soma or Haoma was ritually drunk. After all, as von Hammer demonstrated, Baphomet is not the name of the elusive deity, rather it is the description of the sacred and secret ritual act employed by the Templars in an initiatory context. Baphometis, baptism of wisdom, a quote-unquote baptism of a peculiar kind, Indeed. However, unlike our previous subjects, neither the Knights Templar nor the Grail Knights are associated with any sort of bovine symbolism. Still, as Heinrich ably demonstrates, there is no better candidate for the Holy Grail than the Amanita muscaria mushroom. Indeed, for the Grail is found precisely where one would expect to find a muscaria mushroom, in the forest. For as stated above, the muscaria is a mycorrhizal mushroom, meaning that it can only be found growing within and upon the root systems of host trees. It is quite literally the fruit of the roots of the trees whereon it is found. And like the muscaria, depending on the version of the story, the Grail is described variously as a stone, a platter, and a cup. Recall that the life cycle of a muscaria progresses from its egg or stone shape to that of a flat platter on a stipe, and thence to that of a chalice. Has symbolism pointing to Amanita muscaria mushrooms been preserved in the 3 degrees of craft masonry? It is hard to say. The only evidence of the bovine symbolism which remains in the craft is the spurious account of Pythagoras, Pythagoras's curious hecatomb episode wherein he is said to have sacrificed 100 oxen. However, considering the fact that Pythagoras not only eschewed and condemned the sacrifice of animals of any kind for ritual purpose or otherwise, and that he was a devout vegetarian, intemperate in anything other than a cryptic and symbolic light, Pythagoras' actions appear both barbaric and bizarre. As I argued in my paper, Pythagoras, Sacred Bull Slayer, whatever type of bulls Pythagoras allegedly slaughtered, they were not of flesh and blood. Before closing, it should be noted that muscaria has been used by at least one Masonic order. According to René Laforestier, the incense blend used by Martinus de Pasquale and his order Elu Coens included spore of agaric. While the spores of muscaria are not psychoactive, the fact that the mushroom is referenced at all is worthy of mention. Even Reverend William Alexander Ayton, the famed alchemist of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, purported to have received and drank the true Soma upon his initiation into the Hermetic Brotherhood of Luxor. Soma is spoken of, too, by the infamous H.P. Blavatsky in her book The Secret Doctrine. But the real property of the true Soma was and is to make a new man of the initiate after he is reborn, namely once that he begins to live in his astral body. The partaker of Soma finds himself both linked to his external body and yet away from it in his spiritual form. The latter, freed from the former, soars for the time being in the ethereal higher regions, becoming virtually as one of the gods, and yet preserving in his physical brain the memory of what he sees and learns. Plainly speaking, Soma is the fruit of the tree of knowledge forbidden by the jealous Elohim to Adam and Eve, or Yahweh, lest man should become as one of us. I close with a quote from Freemason and Sufi Reen Gainan, quote, "Concerning the lost words and substituted words, an example can be found notably in the Mazdean tradition, and in this connection we should add that what was lost is represented not only by the sacred cup, that is, by the Grail or various of its equivalents, but also by what it contains. This is readily enough understood for the content, however designated is actually nothing more than the possession of which essentially constitutes one of the privileges of the primordial state. Thus it is said that after the Vedic Soma became unknown in certain epoch, it was necessary to substitute another draft that only represented it. And although not positively indicated anywhere, it even seems that this substitute was later lost in turn. And while on this subject, it bears recalling that in other traditions, wine also substitutes for the draft of immortality. Moreover, this is why it is generally taken as a symbol of the hidden or guarded doctrine, namely esoteric and initiatic knowledge." Sir Knight P.D. Newman is a member of New Albany Commandery No. 29 of New Albany, Mississippi. So there you have it, a super wild ride, perhaps alluding to the secret we've all been chasing throughout masonry, throughout anything, is a mushroom by which, if you'd partake, you become new or born again. There are further connotations there that relate to things, and I'm sure if you're a Mason, you know what I'm talking about, and find the article very fascinating. Listening to a newer podcast, and I'll put links to this in the show notes, there's a new podcast called In the Chair, And it's a Masonic podcast presented by a brother from the UK named Robert Bone. And he's only had a couple episodes out so far, but it is a fantastic podcast. I would strongly urge you to check it out. He's based in the UK. The podcast is primarily has a UK flair, and I would suggest it definitely to our UK listeners. It is wonderful. And in fact, in his latest episode, number 2, he interviewed, I believe, Martin Fox, who is from Lewis Masonic. He's the general manager there. And he says in his interview that one of the greatest things about Masonry, or that Masonry gives us, is the fact that we don't know our own origins. Something to that effect. And it was quite profound to hear, and Robert Bone had the same reaction, which was, wow, you know, we hadn't thought about it that way, and it is so fantastic because this is what allows us to speculate and kind of look deep into Masonry, perhaps into ourselves. And overall, just a great paper by Brother P.D. Newman. Brother Newman, if you're listening, great work as always. And also check out Brother Robert Bone's podcast, In the Chair. And again, that is more of a British idiom in the Masonic system that refers to the East, sitting in the East. He's going into his master's chair, and he's probably in it in just a week or so. His premise for his podcast is documenting his year in the East. A tremendous effort, and I think it's a great premise for a podcast, and I hope he keeps it going beyond that. He's actually a pretty interesting guy. He's a magician by trade, which is pretty cool. So anyway, if you have a minute, his first episode's about 16 minutes. The second episode's about 50 minutes, just shy of an hour. Definitely worth your time. And I sent him a little email to just say, hey, you know, if you ever need anything, let us know. Signed, you know, your buddies in the United States over at Whence Came You. So I hope he responds, and maybe we can have him on the show to talk a little bit about UK Masonry, perhaps. So if you're listening to this, Brother Robert Bone, great job. And maybe you can come on the show sometime and talk to us about UK Masonry and your experience in the East. I'd love to hear about it. Outside of that, we are going to go right into this week's Famous Freemason. So this week on our Famous Freemason segment, it's actually kind of a neat one. You know, in the past, we had talked about famous Freemasons, and sometimes when you want to search for famous Freemason, we search terms like famous Shriners, because for the most part, except for a couple instances, you do have to be a Master Mason to become a Shriner. And what was so interesting to me is our search for current or living famous Freemasons. We've covered Sam Hornish Jr., a NASCAR Indy race car driver a while back, and he even appeared in some of Brother Stephen L. Harrison's segments and also in his book, Tales from the Craft, which I am now sold out of. So if you didn't get one, you can still buy it on Amazon, and I hope you guys go there to find it, and I'll put links up for that as well. But in any case, this week we have two, and these two famous guys are also both NASCAR race car drivers. Now, who are they? Well, I'll read you the short piece here on Shriners International. It's their featured story. NASCAR driver David Reagan joined Shriners International. But it's not just David Reagan, who's also Chris Dilbeck. At the 2012 Imperial Sessions in Charlotte, North Carolina, NASCAR driver David Reagan was inducted into the Shriners International fraternity as a member of Oasis Shriners. Reagan, who hails from Unadilla, Georgia, began racing in the Bandero series at age 12. Under the guidance of his father, Ken, a former Winston Cup driver, Reagan had the advantage of years of exposure to the sport before he ever hit the racetrack. In his second year of competition, he won 12 races and a national championship. As soon as he turned 18, Reagan made his first foray into NASCAR, running select Camping World Truck and Nationwide Series events. In 2007, he was Rookie of the Year of the NASCAR Nationwide Series and runner-up for the Rookie of the Year title in the Sprint Cup Series. Reagan's success continued as he recorded 30 top 10 finishes in the Sprint Cup Series from 2007 to 2011. In 2011, Reagan earned his first victory in the Sprint Cup Series at the Daytona International Speedway Coke Zero 400. Later that year, he also earned a win at the Sprint Showdown. In January of 2012, Reagan joined Front Row Motorsports and will race alongside David Galliard for the Ford team based out of Statesville, North Carolina. Again, this article is from a while back, I'm guessing 2012, because that is the year they keep mentioning. In addition to Reagan's racing achievements, he is a loyal supporter of Shriners International and Shriners Hospital for Children. Since naming our pediatric health care system his official charity of choice in 2008, he has used his popularity to increase awareness and raise funds for the organization. In addition, Reagan has taken time out of his busy schedule to visit several of the Shriners hospitals and participate in public service announcements. At the 2012 Imperial Session, Reagan announced that his number 34 car will be displaying the Shriners Hospitals for Children logo at the Sylvania 300 race in Lundon, New Hampshire, on Sunday, September 23rd. During the induction ceremony, Imperial Potentate Alan Madsen presented Reagan and his friend Chris Dilbeck with their fezes. Both Reagan and Dilbeck were raised Master Masons at Williams Lodge in Cornelius, North Carolina on May 22nd, 2012. Shriners International is thrilled to welcome these two outstanding young men into the fraternity. So there you have it, some really cool stuff. I'll put a link up to this one because it is more current. And of course, we knew about Sam Hornish Jr., but not about these two gentlemen, Brother Chris Dilbeck and Brother David Reagan. So there you have it. That's it for this week. Please feel free to search us on Facebook, find us on Twitter at WhenceCameU. You can check us out on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. And you can also email me there or at admin@wcypodcast.com. Please don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, whether they are historical, whether they're lectures, whether they are opinion pieces. We've always got some really cool stuff going up, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Every Tuesday night, 10-9 Central, we do go live on Google Hangouts with the Masonic Roundtable. I hope you guys like it. If you guys can't catch the live broadcast, we do have it up on YouTube, and that goes out in perpetuity, so it's always there for you to check out. And of course, if you're not into video, we're a bunch of ugly guys, we got faces for radio, maybe you would want to check out the podcast. So please check those out and support when you can. You can check out supporting this show by going to our website and clicking on support the show, and you can check it out. There's a bunch of links there for some shopping websites like freemasontees.com. You can check out freemasonryart.com, and you can check out onnit.com. And by doing those things, when you use the promo code WCY at checkout, you get 10% off, and they send a little bit back to us to help keep these lights on. In addition, if you want a little something from the show to you, please consider buying one of the pins or tie bars, cufflinks, and even a couple money clips left. So check those out. They're all $10 except for the cufflinks. I believe we have set at $15. And that's it, guys. So thank you very much for any support you're able to give. As always, stay on the level. Until next week, I'm Robert Johnson.